7:43, it had been hailed by the United Nations as the country's first peaceful transfer of power. But we ask, when will the Democratic Republic of the Congo finally see lasting peace and stability? This resource-rich sub-Saharan African nation lost 5 million lives to a brutal civil war between 1997 and 2002, and it's on the verge of another political crisis after an allegedly rigged presidential election was narrowly won by Felix Tshisekedi. The BBC announced, by the way, that he'd stepped out of his father's shadow to lead DR Congo. There were all these positive headlines. You know, then this question of election fraud, basically. Let's welcome Jordan Anderson, country risk analyst on Sub-Saharan Africa, the London-based global information provider IHS Market. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
What are the major concerns here? Was it that the election was so close that the main or closest rival, Martin Fayulu, who was backed by two candidates who were prevented by the government from running, was it that that because it was so close that they felt it should be recounted, or were there other grounds for presuming that somehow there was some fraud going on here?
Well, to begin with, I think we have to reinforce with just part of why there's so much concern around this election is how important it is going to be for the DRC, or the potential that it has. Mm. So this election is being held over 2 years late, and there was certainly time during that 2 years and before it where the incumbent president, Joseph Kabila, was clearly considering changing the constitution in a way that would allow him to stay on, to run for another term, and to keep himself being on the ballot. But secondly, the fact that in this election results, when you take and you add the opposition candidates together, even in the official results, despite the concerns about the legitimacy of those, 74% of the voters who turned out, 74% voted for opposition candidates in the official results the Electoral Commission has recorded. So really what these two factors together create the opportunity for in DRC is the first peaceful transfer of the presidency in the whole country's history. There have only been four presidents since independence in 1960. There's always been a violent transfer of power, so this is really the first opportunity to have that. And it's also significant this was an election where the voters came out, voted overwhelmingly for this change, and really the fact that you got this change, that you didn't see President Kabila staying on, that is the product of domestic Congolese and regional African pressure. So really this is truly Congolese and African progress towards greater democracy, and it's being driven within the country and within the region.
Just briefly on that background, why were so many people voting for opposition candidates? What's going on in that country that's making people unhappy with the establishment?
Well, so we've seen both Joseph Kabila, his father Laurent Kabila, have been in power for quite some time. Joseph Kabila himself has been in power for 18 years, and his father was in before him. So there's a certain amount of just of a desire for change, but there's also a feeling that the progress in the country has stalled. The fact that the cost of living continues to be high and remains high in the country, the fact that there continues to be chronic and gripping violence, especially in the east of the country. But since 2016, the central Kasai region of the country, one that historically had been much more peaceful, has also seen an outbreak of violence and armed groups fighting there. The economy hasn't grown in the way people expected. There aren't the jobs that people were looking forward to. And really, a lot of the population probably looked and wondered what they were really expecting to get from another 5 years of the ruling alliance that is in power so far. And really, this is why both Martin Fayulu and Felix Tshisekedi, the opposition candidates, drew huge amounts of support from the youth population of DRC, from young people who are really wanting to demand something new from their government.
And coming back to the evidence for potential voter fraud going on here, or some sort of irregularity, we know that even the Catholic Church, for example, has been taking a stand. It fielded 40,000 observers, reportedly, and has been disputed disputing this closed door tallying of the election results. Is this enough evidence at this point that we have to suggest that Felix Tshisekedi was maybe not the fair winner?
It can certainly be suggested. I mean, and the Catholic Church has already come out and said this is not the result that we were expecting to see. We've seen the government of France come out and condemn it as well. Really, though, what will make the distinction inside Congo itself is whether the Catholic Church moves beyond just saying this was not the result we expected, and whether or not they actually release their own voting, their own parallel vote counting data, which they have from that electoral observer mission that you mentioned. If they actually come out and release that data, that allows Martin Fayulu to contest the result of the election much more vigorously than if they withhold onto it and don't publish it. And it's certainly not a done deal that the Catholic Church will release this data just because they have it. So during the Congo's previous elections in 2011, the Catholic Church similarly had its own voter data or its own voting data, which contrasted with the official result. But the Catholic bishops and the church leadership was divided amongst itself, and as a consequence, couldn't agree on releasing it, and so they didn't. What we may therefore say is if we see some of the bishops feeling that a Tshisekedi win is enough of a change, they don't want to disrupt the process, and they decide not to release that data, it's going to be very hard for Martin Fayulu to strongly and vigorously make the case that he is the real winner and it's been taken away from him. And he doesn't just have the Catholic Church's word for his reasons to think that. There was also a certain amount of independent polling that was done of a high quality in Congo, and those were leaning much more towards a Fayulu victory was more likely than a Tshisekedi victory. Polls are obviously imperfect, but that was what the polls were suggesting leading up into the election.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we remember Trump and Brexit and all sorts of other votes that went against expectations, especially when they're relatively close. But aside from that potential for inaccurate polling, we also had other things going on, didn't we? Like an Ebola health emergency, which kept some voters away. And that wasn't anything to do with foul play by the government, was it?
Well, this is the official reason that voting was postponed in four constituencies. They still haven't voted, and they're actually going to vote in March, despite the fact that officially the plan is to swear in the new president in January. So they're going to take part in an election, the outcome of which has already been inaugurated. Now, the government didn't create that Ebola outbreak, but that didn't necessarily mean it was actually impossible to hold an election in the Ebola-impacted areas.
All right.
And we know this for a fact because two of those areas, called Beni and Butembo, when the population there was told that their voting was being postponed, they organized their own symbolic election on the day. They opened the voting booths, people came out, lined up, and took part in a symbolic election. I was obviously not recognized as official, but it was demonstrated that it could be done. And really, what's important to remember about these four parts of the country that haven't voted yet is the fact that the results that we have from the election so far are provisional. And we may still see the Congolese government or the Congolese Constitutional Court come out and say that until those four constituencies vote in March, all the results have to remain provisional. You can't have a new president until March or April until those areas have voted. And that creates another opportunity, for example, for President Kabila to extend his tenure by a few months, or possibly to bring in a new government of national unity that combines Tshisekedi with some other members of the opposition, some members of the ruling alliance, and allows them to keep having their influence be felt in that way.
By the way, as an aside, one of the fears now is that weakened public trust in this election outcome, as well as just some of the chaos, could allow Ebola to gain more of a foothold, that there could be a greater public health emergency. Is that a valid fear as well?
There are certainly a huge number of challenges facing the counter-Ebola efforts in DRC's North Kivu and Ituri provinces. Really, the biggest challenge is the armed groups that are operating in those areas. And while the way the armed groups operate and they fight isn't directly tied into the elections, it's not entirely unrelated. But that challenge would exist regardless of whether or not there was the election. So it's a concern, but the election isn't the primary driver of the fighting that makes it very hard for the health workers to do their work in those areas.
Let's talk about how outside players could be influential in what happens next. The African Union, for example, the Southern African Development Community, but also Belgium, the UK, France, the US, the EU generally, even the United Nations. Among all these outside players, how do we expect their influence to allow itself to be felt?
when we're talking about the European powers, so France, Belgium, the United Kingdom, or the United States, lots of them have shown a willingness to come out, to make statements. Certainly we've seen the United States coming out and saying the election was neither free nor fair. That's something that's coming out of the U.S. Congress. We've seen the French government say that this was not the result they believe is the real result. But this has largely been limited to making these statements, and really they haven't been able to affect a lot of influence or change on the ground. The fact that Kabila is not or did not amend the Constitution and was not on the ballot is not really the result of European or American pressure. Instead, it's a result of pressure both from within Congo, so from within the protest movements, the civil society groups, and the Catholic Church, and also from the regional powers. In particular, we think of Angola and Rwanda here, two states who increasingly saw that Kabila's strategy of just trying to delay the elections and delay the elections and keep himself in power, they came to believe that that was driving instability and violence along their borders, and particularly in Angola's case, that that was driving Congolese refugees into Angola. And these are two governments that are both very, very influential with the Congolese government and have a lot of leverage with them, and that those governments, particularly during 2017, started to tell Kabila, you have got to create a new political solution. You have got to go. There has to be a change in your country. And that pressure was absolutely key. So really the region has played a role in pushing Kabila not to be on the ballot and in probably forcing him to accept an outcome of this election, which at least sees Tshisekedi or some amount of opposition coming into government.
The fact that the SADC, the Southern African Development Community, is being so vocal, though, it's been reported as something of a change, a much stronger stance than previously. What explains that?
Well, the SADC, the SADC, it's not unusual that it is speaking out. It normally issues statements. It is usually quite cautious in terms of how it talks about other leaders and what's going on. And certainly I think SADC's tone is still quite moderate. They aren't taking a stringent approach on it. So, for example, over the weekend, SADC has called for a recount of the election results, but they said they want to do that in order to reassure both the winners and the losers. So it's, again, more about conciliating people and helping people move on. Again, and SADC also said that they wanted to see an inclusive, an all-inclusive government coming out, which is essentially calling for a government of national unity that brings the pro-Kabila camp and the opposition together. And again, that's not necessarily, for example, taking the stance of the French government and saying, we believe there was a different result, or taking the stance of the American government and saying that we don't think this election was free or fair. Both the African Union and SADC said they were largely satisfied with how the election took place. And what SADC is calling for, like I say, is a unity government, which isn't the same as calling for a big change in the country. So it's still quite moderate and measured in its tone.
Mr. Anderson, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great to have your analysis, Jordan Anderson, there from IHS Market. And what the country you would think needs is democratic maturity to come into play so that you haven't, for example, got this reliance on a church to provide the voice of democracy there. But this is a country where the church does provide schooling, healthcare and basic services, and it's no coincidence that it's the voice of democracy there right now. We'll continue this morning after BBC World News.